the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
John Gibbons is with us for the last word on the environment. John, we have a housing shortage in this country. We need, by most agreement, about 50,000 new units a year because we need to make up a backlog of not having built enough houses and apartments. But we're doing about 30,000 to 35,000 a year. There's a shortfall of about 15,000 a year. So park that 15,000 in one place. 2 decades ago, we used to build about 23,000 one-off homes each year in this country. And then because of planning restrictions and other issues, the number has now dropped to 5,000. Imagine changing all those planning restrictions again to leave people all over the country on their own land to build their own homes. Might you not make up the shortfall and keep lots of people happy that they could use their own family land to build the houses that they need, and they could come back from foreign places and take up jobs in local areas all over the country? Is the government's idea for the biggest overhaul in rural housing rules in 2 decades a good one?
Yeah, good evening, Matt. I don't think so. I'm around long enough to remember 2024, when the government, featuring the same ministers and Taoiseach and Taoiseach that we have today, issued the National Planning Framework. So this is their best advice in terms of how we strategically plan. This is 2 years ago, Matt, not 20 years ago. And they said that part of its objectives were to, quote, end the continuous expansion and sprawl of cities and towns into the countryside. So they understood as recently as 2 years ago that we have a huge problem with the suburbanization of rural Ireland. It's bad for rural Ireland, it's very bad for people, and it's bad for Ireland as a whole for a whole variety of reasons. And I would say, Matt, as well, that, you know, sometimes it's very important to do a couple of things. Number one, listen to the experts. The planners are completely against this. I heard one of the guys from the Planning Institute with you here the other day, making many solid arguments from a planning point of view. And their job, they're the professional planners. Their job isn't to get re-elected and to chase votes. Their job is to plan the country in a logical way that makes sense for the future, for the long term. Because when you build a house, you're putting down something that is going to change the landscape for the next century, maybe a lot longer than that. Therefore, planning isn't something that you do willy-nilly, and you don't fling houses out along country roads like you're throwing confetti at a wedding. And that is the plan.
But if there are already houses there, and if you're talking about building houses in the back garden or adjacent to existing houses that you're sort of filling in alongside what's there, aren't you giving people who otherwise would not be able to afford houses or apartments in urban settings the opportunity to have somewhere affordable to live?
Well, that's an argument. But the argument that the professional planners will counter that with is that we need to organise our societies, our cities, our towns, our villages. Now, I'll put it to you this way, Matt, that the suburban sprawl and the suburbanisation of rural Ireland is also, conversely, the thing that is destroying our towns and villages. It is hollowing them out. That's why you've got the pubs in those villages that are shut down. You've got the local shops that have failed because the people who would normally have lived within the catchment area for walking, for cycling, for very short drives, they're now living scattered out in the countryside. They're driving past their local village and town, and they're going on to the Lidl in the next major town. So we get the hollowing out of rural Ireland. We also, of course, get a whole bunch of other effects that go with it. For example, the cost of delivering services for the Irish state, whether it's electricity services, whether it's broadband, whether it's postal service, doctors, community nurses, Gardaí, firefighters, all of these costs are sent spiralling when you have to provide to access people in once-off houses up country lanes here and there. Now, I'm not for a moment arguing against people who have a genuine reason to live in rural Ireland. So, for example, the farming community and other people who are genuinely based in rural Ireland. But what we're doing here is this suburbanisation process goes against not just the professional planning advice here in Ireland, but if you look to the UK, if you go to England, you go to France, you go to Italy and Spain, these are countries that have been at this a long time. You have towns, you have villages, and you have hamlets, Matt. And in between them, you have the countryside. The only one-off buildings you'll see in rural France and rural Spain are farmsteads. They do not allow the countryside to be scattered willy-nilly with houses. Now, You'll have seen reports in recent days that 300,000 septic tanks have been found
We've discussed that on the programme. Well, now, in fairness, a sample suggests that many are defective.
That's right.
That's not how many who have been found to be defective. But if you do random sampling, that's the estimated number.
And I think it's a fair estimate. So Simon Harris and co are suggesting let's lash out another 100,000 once-off houses out across rural Ireland. Let's each of them have to build its own septic tank. Let's each of them be discharging grey water into the environment. Where do you think that's going to end up? We know we can't manage the septic tanks that we have already. So there's a few other things, Matt, that I think are worth discussing. For example, let's say 100,000. Let's say we put in 100,000 extra houses, right? On average, they'll use a half acre site each. That's 50,000 acres of prime agricultural land lost. I haven't heard a single person say this, right?
But hang on now. If you're using land out the back of a house, that may not be used for agriculture.
By and large, the type of rural housing that we're talking about here are the ones that are built along the roads that are taking bites, half acre, three quarters of acre, 1 acre sites built along. And they're eating into prime agricultural land. Now, we get very exercised in certain parts of the country about the loss of land, for example, for solar farms. But when it comes to one-off housing, not a bother.
Okay, listener says that gentleman has no idea about the quality attached to rural living. You grew up in a farm.
I grew up in a farm. And if I can add to that, right, what we're doing here is baking in a few things, right? Number one is car dependency. Number two is rural isolation. We had a survey, as you know, you covered it on this programme recently, that showing that Ireland has the highest levels of loneliness in Europe. 1 in 5 Irish people are lonely. Now, once-off, isolated rural homesteads are a big part of rural isolation. Now, people might start out with the best of intentions, but the clock is running on us, we all get old. Next thing we find that we're aged, we're unable, maybe we can no longer drive, and suddenly that ideal rural house that you built that was great, had a bit of land, it suddenly becomes a trap. You're now stuck in it. Maybe you can't drive. You're isolated from your neighbours. You can't get to the local shop. You can't get to mass. That's what we're storing up for Matt for the future.
A listener says not everyone wants to be forced into living in cities and towns. Okay, another issue this week. We'd heard that the EPA said that basically this idea of hitting 51% reduction in our emissions by the end of the decade, dead as a dodo. If we get to 25%, we'll have done well. Minister Dara O'Brien, who's responsible for this, says we'll do it in the 2030s.
Yeah, we'll do it mañana, I think is what Dara O'Brien is saying. And if we look at the data, Matt, from this report, realistically, on current trajectory, we're not going to do 25%. We're going to do, at best, 13%. We're going to achieve about one quarter of our target. The 25%.
You know, that's not bad, though, is it, when you consider how much the population of the country has grown over the last decade, how many more people have worked. And the government is arguing that it has managed, and this is a significant win, to decouple carbon emissions from the growth of the economy.
I think there's a certain validity to that argument, but you look at other countries that have broken this decisively and that argument really comes asunder. So, for example, they've also had headwinds, advantages that no previous government had. For example, the availability of renewable energy, the fact that we now have electric vehicles. These are things, the fact that we have properly insulated houses.
Which is things that the government have encouraged and invested in.
Indeed. Now, many of those are technological changes that have given a headwind, that have made some of these gains basically impossible. You'd have to fall over your own feet not to make these gains. It's the hard ones, Matt. So let's turn to some of our favourites, like, for example, on agriculture, which accounts for about 40% of national emissions. The range they're saying at the moment runs from a high of 19%, although I can't see any scenario in which that's going to happen, to a more realistic 4%. So that again is that. So if we're looking at 40% of our emissions achieving a 4% reduction, that is nothing but failure writ large. And of course, that is failure by policy. The same government that you're telling me is focused on this is the same government that is doing nothing to reverse to bring down agricultural emissions. It's business as usual on that front. So, and we have other issues like land use emissions. We know, for example, again, with transport, we're expecting significant reductions there. We're seeing the uptake of EVs. Again, this is something well beyond our shores, but we're getting the benefit. And isn't it great? On electricity, that's probably the most positive story to come out of this. We reckon about 60% of electricity generation can be considered to be renewable by the end of the decade. Now, that, of course, depends on whether or not the our friends in the data centres eat all our electricity along the way.
Well, yeah, the data centres. Tell us about this new report by Friends of the Earth Ireland and Beyond Fossil Fuels. The claim that they're making about how much extra every household pays because of data centres.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, what's critical here is, first of all, how anomalous Ireland is with regard to data centres. Typically across Europe, maybe low single digits of the national grid are dedicated to data centres. In Ireland, it's 22% at the moment of all the electricity that we produced. And that is slated.
Isn't that because all of the major tech companies locate in Ireland and don't locate in those other countries in Europe? And they need the data centres to offer the services they provide. And the payback for us in Ireland is that they pay us massive corporation taxes, which can go into things like retrofitting when you talk about environmental issues, and pay all the other bills like the health service, the education, the rest of it. That this is a trade-off.
Yeah, certainly that is the decision that the government has made when they went gangbusters on data centres. Many other governments, Matt, have looked at the same scenario and have said, well, actually, yeah, we'll take some data centres, but we're not going to be a data centre dump. And the problem here is that the weight of data centres pressing down on the Irish grid. First of all, it's adding hugely to the cost of grid maintenance and upgrading to cope with the data centres, number one. Secondly, the very nature of data centres, because the electricity demand from data centres is inflexible. What I mean by that is it runs 24/7. There's other services that can be zoomed up and down.
But have you not taken the corporation tax revenues into account?
Well, corporation tax isn't going to keep the lights on. Right.
It is. Well, it does literally keep the lights on. That's where all the money, the 36 billion a year in corporation tax that we get in, which is way more than we'd ever expected, is what pays so many bills.
Well, granted, what it doesn't do is maintain a grid, and grids are complex.
But sorry, it does. It actually provides a lot of the money for the reinvestment in the grid.
Okay, well, granted, but I think on the employment front, we know that data centres directly employ maybe 1,800 people in Ireland, which is around about the same as Woody's superstores, thereabouts.
Okay, but I'll give you something else. This study estimates an estimated cumulative average of €360 a year to household electricity bills. And then it struck me. Well, actually, if you look back over the last 5 years, if you took the average of the energy credits that have been given to everyone home, it's way more than 360 a year. So that essentially, the energy credits could be seen as a compensation payment for the higher bills caused by the data centres, and therefore individuals and homes are not losing out.
Well, of course, those energy credits were nothing to do, as you know, with the data centres.
No, they were
to offset shocks, energy shocks, as a result, for example, of the Ukraine war and more recently the
Yeah, but I'm talking about the net effect.
No, the net effect, sure. But I don't think that we can double dip and say that we can cover all things with the same money, right? But the critical thing here is, I suppose, the Irish public have to decide, you know, do we want to subsidise data centres directly from our bills? Are we satisfied that our bills are going to be higher? And people may be wondering why our bills are higher. Apart from that, the grid pressure that I've described, the main thing is this sort of build-up of pressure on our grid from data centres is slowing up our renewable transition. And the big reason why this is an issue is that when the wind is blowing strongly, when we've got a lot of solar, electricity prices fall down to about €100 a megawatt. Now, when they don't, Matt, when we're relying on gas, it's almost double that. So what's happening here is that because this is forcing our hand to be more reliant on gas, it's pushing up prices, not just for them, but for everyone. And by the way, Matt,
most of those data centres are actually paying an enormous amount for having the wind energy created. They fund for many of the wind farms around the country.
They've made a contribution towards it, but it is not offsetting this. And even some of the mandates that are in place, for example, the idea that they're supposed to have 80% renewable energy, it's still falling behind. And I think that the gist of this report, that the critical point they made is that we're not only are we running to stand still here in terms of our renewable transition, but we're imposing huge costs on the Irish public. We're also, these data centres are mopping up tens of millions of litres of valuable fresh water. And one of these days, your local authority will be telling you that there's a hose pipe ban. Meanwhile, up the road, the data centre will be horsing through it.
Thank you, John Givens, for our weekly Last Word on the Environment.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.